John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Curtis Rogers here with you for one more hour, filling in for the professor, John Clayton. You guys have come through on the text line tweeting us your worst quarterbacks. 253 says Max Hall was so bad. Remember Max Hall, the former Cardinals quarterback? He turned out to be a crackhead, so I think that's why he was such a bad quarterback.
That's not a performance enhancer, I don't think.
No, definitely not. Todd Marinovich, also another guy in that category, 360, texted that one in. Stan Gelba, 206. Keely Smith, 360, texting that one in. Dan McGuire, a lot of Seahawks on this one. And there have been some rough years in Seattle. Rick Meyer, Dan McGuire, Kelly Stauffer. Just a cavalcade of stars coming through.
I feel like we probably haven't talked about enough Browns quarterbacks.
No, I know. They have a list that goes on for days. Spurgeon Wynn, I think he was one. You've got, Kelly Holcomb, Tim Couch. Just a lot of bad quarterbacks in Cleveland. Speaking of bad quarterbacks, yesterday, Derek Carr's day. He was not good. ESPN, they tweeted out their next-gen stats on Derek Carr and his throw chart. He didn't attempt a pass yesterday that went beyond 10 yards, and then he also attempted the majority of his passes behind the line of scrimmage. He was terrible yesterday, only threw for about 142 yards. And a big reason as to why the Seahawks defense was so effective against Oakland's aerial assault was Bradley McDougal, who we saw put an absolute licking on Amari Cooper, who came over the middle on one of those plays. Let's go out to London, hear from John Clayton, who was joined by Bradley McDougal down in the locker room.
Joining us right now, Bradley McDougal. So, Legion of Boom is no more. The boom's still there. What's going on with the boom?
Man, it's in our DNA. You know, we're pedigrees of the guys in front of us. You know, it was the LOB before us, and it's not like we're a new group of guys. We were under these guys. We were with all of these guys just last year. And we watched how they prepared. We watched how they brought their passion to the game and what they did on the field and how they laid their body out for the man next to them. And that's what we're implicating now. That's what we're trying to replicate and duplicate and go out there and just lay it on the line for our brothers.
People are talking about guys like Cam Chancellor really helping you out, but you've been talking about that for a long time. The guidance you got from him last year, you carried over to this year. But what is it about the physical part that you guys have been able to carry over?
It's really just being in the right time at the right place at the right time. You know, it's unbelievable how many big plays you can make if you actually just do your job. You just get to your zone, you read the quarterback, you break off his intentions, and you get to where the ball's at. And when you get there with an attitude, you get there with a tenacity about you that you're going to make a play and good things are going to happen.
Now, I know concussions are a concern. Four hits, four concussions in 2 days or two games, all legal, good, solid hits.
I mean, we got to credit our coaches for that a little bit. Media and teams and coaches and everybody's been and complaining about these penalties on illegal hits and legal hits and how it slows the defense down. But target zones and legal hits is something Pete's been coaching since OTAs when we didn't even have pads on. You know, he's big on that. He wants you to take your shots. He wants you to blow guys up, but he wants you to do it the legal way. That's part of our game. Before they made the changes to these hits and before they did all the extra things to make the game safer, big hits were always a part of this game. Like I said, I'm praying for Amari Cooper. I hope he bounces back, but, you know, that's just a part of our game.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, it's like, okay, where everybody's on the D-line's concerned about, okay, what do you do, what do you do? You guys, Tedrick, yourself, you don't hold back. You just go and play.
Yeah. If you play this game the right way and you play this game balls to the wall, I mean, it's hard to hold back. It's hard to really change your style of play, you know? You just gotta stay in zone, stay locked in, and just know what can hurt you. You know what I mean? And when they catch the ball, you gotta know that they tend to duck down. It's just a part of the game. You gotta alter your play. You know, there's no excuses.
Of course, it's also have to have two cornerbacks that are really good stuffing the run along with coverage.
It definitely helps, and especially when they have plays designed to make the corner tackle. You know, make the ball bounce all the way to the outside. It helps. You know, and that's another identity of our defense. Everybody tackles. You don't just stand around. You don't just cover a guy. You don't get to pick and choose when you want to play. Everybody plays. Everybody tackles.
So you know what the challenge is now during the bye week? You got to figure out a name.
No,
what kind of name?
No name.
You want a name for
the Legion? No, I want to be the underdogs. I just want to keep
the underdogs.
Yeah, that's what it is. I feel like a cool nickname is given to you. You don't pick one out.
Okay.
So we're gonna keep playing our game, and the nickname gonna get handed to us.
Bradley, thank you.
That was Bradley McDougal with John Clayton. at the Seahawks locker room following yesterday's 27-3 blowout win. And you bring up the nickname of the secondary. These guys, I don't think you can ever call them anything close to Legion of Boom, but you got to, you know, if they get to a level where they become respected throughout the league, because everybody's still learning about this secondary throughout the NFL, and there are guys that are still very much unknowns to a lot of opposing fan bases. You're not going to hear guys mention Tedrick Thompson or Delano Hill or any of those names league-wide like we mention them here in Seattle, because we know these guys. We see them every single week. We talk about them every single week. Their play is going to, you know, if they continue to have games like they did on Sunday where you have Bradley McDougald just absolutely laying it out and, you know, you've got Amari Cooper leaving the game, I think it's going to give notice to a lot of people across the NFL. Like, these guys are a force to be reckoned with, and maybe they don't have the name value of Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, but they're very good on their own right. One of those guys yesterday, and a guy who has been unafraid to lay some big hits out there, Tedrick Thompson, he joined John Clayton.
Right now, Senator Thompson, I know that the Legion of Boom is no more, but what is it about the last couple of weeks and the way everything's coming together? This is like the Legion of Boom. Big hits, legal hits, yeah, that can really make an impact.
I don't think the LOB went nowhere. We learned from the guys who started it. Cam's still here. Cam's still vocal with us. And you know, they don't want it to die. I know Sherm doesn't. I know ET doesn't. I know Cam doesn't. So we're just trying to keep the legacy going that they started.
So what kind of things do they tell you to do?
Cam, just play together. I think that's the biggest thing from all three. If we play together and believe in each other, we can do great things. So play together and be physical. I think that's the biggest message they can send.
And that's the thing that's been so noticeable now. This is remaining a very physical secondary.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. I think coming into this game, we all, B-Mac started it. He, you know, he got us together this week and said we need to improve on our tackling as a defense as a whole, but mainly as a defensive backfield, because he missed a lot of tackles last week, and I think we improved on that this week.
What good do you feel about what you did? Because, again, you had a good game last week, a couple things to fix up. Did you fix up everything in this game?
I think so. I was really focused on it, so I think that's the main thing. I feel like when I improved on the tackle, I think that was the biggest thing coming into this week. I wanted to wrap up, and I think I did an okay job with those.
Yeah. And one thing that's amazing about this team, too, the cornerbacks and how well they handle the run game.
Right.
Trey Flowers, Shaq Griffin, they really come up and do well on the run.
Yeah, and then, you know, that kind of like leads back to what you were saying about LOB being no more, Sherm, and OGBB was great tackler. So watching they film and, you know, being around them for a year, I think our current corners tackle really well. I think we got the best tackling corners in the league, and I know they're going to keep it up, so we got to have their back.
What does this mean for you? Because, again, I know that the value of the free safety position that Earl has and what you have make it easier for the corners. But when they come up and make tackles and do the underneath stuff like that, how much does that help you in the safeties?
It just helps a lot because it takes a lot of stress off of because we know they're going to make those tackles, so we're not out there thinking as much. We're able to play fast because we put our trust in our corners that when a run comes that way, they're going to bring it down. So that's the biggest thing.
Yeah. How good was it to be able to hold Derek Carr to like 4.6 yards an attempt?
Yeah. You got to get a credit to the D-line. Them boys back there, they was working. They was getting pressure on them. And I think that was the biggest thing coming into them. We trusted them. We knew the D-line was going to get pressure on them, so we just had to stay on top while they do their thing. And that really goes to the D-line, so shout out to them.
Two games in a bye week. How good do you feel the way you're growing in this position?
Me personally?
Yes.
I feel good. You know, I think the biggest thing is I got the trust in my teammates to keep me going and never let me get down on myself, whether it's a good player or bad player. So I give a lot of credit to my teammates for keeping me up.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Seahawks safety Tedrick Thompson joined by John Clayton following yesterday's 27-3 victory over Oakland. You hear it in Tedrick Thompson's voice. You hear it in Bradley McDougal's voice. Those guys were pumped up after that one. Text from the 253 says, are you speeding up these interviews? Sounds like chipmunks going, nah, man, they're just that excited. They played the best game they've played all season, and everybody feeling real good after a win to get them back to 500 heading into that much-needed bye week. When we return, it's the report card. We're handing out grades here on a Monday. Progress report time. Curtis Rogers filling in for John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for the report card with the Professor.
Class is in session. Curtis Rogers in for the Professor today. By the way, at 11:30, get your text questions in. We're answering anything and everything. Coors Light text line is there for you. 710-710 is the number to text, but it's report card time. Mora, what's on the docket first?
Well, Vontaze Burfict has only been back for a short time, but he's, you know, making some waves as he does already. And the Steelers and Bengals is always a chippy game, if you will. And yesterday, apparently, in the third quarter of the game, Antonio Brown caught a slot from Roethlisberger, and Brown was being wrapped up by a couple of Bengals when Burfict came in kind of late and appeared to give him a little bit of an elbow to the helmet. After the game, Roethlisberger was talking to Ron Cook of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and he said, "He hits AB, then literally, as I'm under center for the next play, he points at Juju and says, 'You're next.'" Roethlisberger said, "How do you allow that stuff?" And then this is what Juju Smith-Schuster had to say after the game.
"Were there threats made to you on the field at all at any time?"
"Major threats. They're all making threats at me. They dropping F-bombs, everything. They said Burfict was out there lying, saying I spit on him, which I didn't. Dunlap is hella cool. He was talking about video games. That was pretty cool, man."
Vontaze Burfict is a legit terrifying person. Like, there is no NFL player I'd want to meet in a dark alley less than him.
Yeah, he's not one of those people that turns it on and off for the game. Like, you think he's just legitimately insane all the time.
I think he is one of the craziest dudes in the league. And I don't find myself in back alleys too often, but I would hope to never encounter him.
I like how Smith-Schuster threw in at the end there that Carlos Dunlap was just talking about video games, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, just some light banter going back and forth. Every NFL player, I would guess, or most of them, enjoy talking video games rather than getting threats on their life from Vontaze Burfict. One of my favorite, like, NFL, or not NFL picture, but one of my favorite football pictures involves Vontaze Burfict. It's out there. It's from his days at Arizona State when he was in college. He's lined up on the opposite side of Matt Barkley. And he's pointing directly at Matt Barkley and has this look of like, "I'm going to rip your head off." And Matt Barkley, former quarterback at USC, has this just scared look in his eyes. And he's just, you can tell he's just bracing for impact. It's one of the great action shots that you'll see out there. But Vontaze Burfict, I'm going to give Vontaze Burfict a D because, I mean, that's just maybe what he's – anybody at ASU is not going to get above a C regardless. That's just, you know, that's a C at ASU is like a 4.0 anywhere else. But Vontaze Burfict, he gets a D. What else is on the report card today?
Well, just one more from that game. After the game, Ben Roethlisberger talked about the possible return of Le'Veon Bell, which all the media is saying is going to happen, but he's saying he hasn't heard anything about it from Bell himself.
"There were a lot of plays like that tonight. I know on one sideline, Vance broke a tackle by Burfict, and then other guys, and James was breaking tackles. That gets guys going. You know, it gets you juiced up that guys are being physical. And it's a lot of fun to see. Guys aren't going to quit on plays. And James, I thought, was a bowling ball today. He was all over the place. What a great game. But, you know, I know it's his last game for us, so this Le'Veon's coming back. But I thought he did well in his last one."
"Are you sure it's Connor's last game?"
I don't know. That's just what I've heard.
Anybody heard anything from him?
Nope. I'm just going off what I hear from reports from you guys.
That Steelers locker room is just a mess right now. You've got Antonio Brown kind of saying, like, "Trade me, but oh, I was kidding. Don't actually trade me." Big Ben not getting along with his star running back, not even talking to his star running back, and then that Le'Veon Bell, the guy who has basically held that franchise hostage for the first part of this season. Mike Tomlin, you've never heard of the Steelers locker room having a bunch of strife until, like, maybe, I think it started last year, and now it's full-blown out of control. And you got to wonder, does Tomlin have the pulse of Pittsburgh's locker room? And if so, like, what's he doing to stop this?
Because, yeah, I think it all started when Antonio Brown was Facebook Living from their locker.
Facebook Live after, was it a postseason game or it was like a wild card round game? Man, that is just insane. And the Steelers were an organization that never really had these kinds of problems. The years with, like, Hines Ward and Jerome Bettis, Antonio Holmes, You never saw a lot of big-time personalities. And the ones that were, quote-unquote, big-time, the Joey Porters, the James Harrisons, they didn't really act out against their team. They acted out against other teams. They were going to put other guys, you know, through the ringer rather than their own guys. But now we're seeing Pittsburgh turn on themselves. And, you know, as somebody in Seattle who grew up hating the Steelers because of what happened in Super Bowl 40, this is a very welcome change of pace, and I can't stand the Steelers at all. So I'll give Big Ben another D, and it's because
this is very different from the way the professor talks about the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh yeah, I am very aware. You know,
even though he's not biased.
No, not biased at all. Born and raised in Pittsburgh, or the Pittsburgh area, but yeah, Pittsburgh Steelers, they're a mess right now. Even though they still are piling up wins, they won yesterday on a last-second touchdown to Antonio Brown, 31 yards out. Yeah, that's what Big Ben's getting. You got to know what your guys are thinking. Even if they're not there, you got to still be in constant contact. What else we got on the report card?
Well, I know you wanted to touch on this one. Unfortunately, Paul Gutierrez, the Raiders reporter, has the quote. I had trouble finding the audio, but I did have they played it on SportsCenter last night, and Sage Steele recorded it. So it's a little quiet, but you can hear Bruce Irvin post game had an interesting take on the loss.
You know, I got a beautiful wife I get to go home to, boy. I'm trying to make some babies, man.
Wow. So if you couldn't hear that, Bruce Irvin asked about the road trip, about what he's going to do when he gets back. Paul Gutierrez of ESPN, the Raiders beat writer, said he's got the quote from Bruce Irvin, fan favorite here in Seattle from his time with the Seahawks. He says, quote, "We lost, but I've got a beautiful wife to get home to, and I'm going to try to make some babies, man." So I'm going to give Bruce Irvin...
He's a glass half full guy.
Yeah, that absolutely is. I'm going to give Bruce Irvin an A on that one because you always got to think positively. And at the end of the day, if you've got a happy wife at home, And kids to come home to, that's the best thing. And I don't have either, so I wouldn't know. But Bruce Irvin keeping it all in perspective. Yeah, they lost 27-3, but they've got a bye week coming up. He's going to have some downtime, and you know, hopefully, best of luck to Mr. and Mrs. Irvin there, and in their attempts to have another child. Yeah, I'm going to give Bruce Irvin an A right there. Always keeping it in perspective. He's one of the great NFL player follows on Twitter, no doubt about it. You can also follow Mora on Twitter at Mora_Duel. You can follow me on Twitter at A Kid From Kent. When we return, we're answering your text questions. Text anything and everything to the Coors Light text line. 710-710 is the number to text. Curtis Rogers filling in for John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Coming up at 11:45, I'll be joined by the Graz. Huge, huge weekend to recap. Seahawks with a big win. Huskies with a big loss. And I'll talk to him about an incredible service he's providing currently to the city of Seattle. Stay tuned for that. But right now, we answer your text questions on the Coors Light text line, 710-710. Mora, what do we have leading us off today?
253 says, good morning. With the Hawks 3-3, where do you see their final record being, and do they make the playoffs?
I think right now, based off of what the Seahawks have in front of them, they've got a very favorable schedule with, what is it, 6 home games remaining. And you look at teams like the Lions coming up right out of the bye. I think they could win that. Their road games remaining, I could see them beating San Francisco. They've only got 4 of those left at the Rams and at Carolina. Those are going to be toss-ups. I think their home games, I think they go 2-2 on the road the rest of the way. And I think their home games, I think they beat the Packers, 49ers, and Cardinals. So that's 5 more wins. That's 8 right there. And then I think some of these games that you toss it up, Carolina against the Vikings at home, I think they could finish with 9 wins. And I think 9 wins gets you into the postseason in the NFC. So I think the Seahawks right now are looking at a wild card berth in their future.
I like it. I agree with that. And I was closer to a 7-win prediction to start the season. I'll admit I was wrong. I think they're better than I thought, and I think the NFC is more wide open than I thought.
Absolutely. What else we got?
541 says, Mr. Rogers, your thought on the Cowboys Conor McGregor strut touchdown celebration?
He lost, though. Conor McGregor lost, so I don't know if that's somebody you want to be emulating. Not only did he lose, he got beat up in the ring afterwards. That's not a good way to go. But Cowboys had themselves a field day yesterday against a previously vaunted Jaguars defense. Jalen Ramsey, a guy who talks a lot of trash, very, very quiet following yesterday's ballgame.
Yeah, actually, I have, I believe I have a little bit of that sound
here. Let's hear it.
You guys have played together a lot as a secondary. How do you kind of explain some of the blown assignments that you guys had early in this game?
Mm-hmm. Coach said that he felt like it wasn't an effort issue. It was a miscommunication issue. Do you agree with that?
Jalen, what challenge did Cole Beasley pose today?
Wow.
Yeah, he has a lot to say about his offensive opponents. I wonder how they would assess his performance yesterday.
Yeah, I think they probably would have given him an A because they just were running up and down on the Jaguars defense.
All right, 206 says peanut M&Ms or plain M&Ms. Do you have a favorite?
Peanut M&Ms.
Me too.
Love
every time.
M&Ms. Yes, absolutely.
What about peanut butter?
Yeah, I can get down with those, too. I would say peanut M&Ms are my number one favorite flavor. I've enjoyed the pretzel ones, too.
Ooh, I haven't tried those.
Yeah, the crispy ones, bit of an acquired taste. Not totally down with crispy M&Ms.
All right.
Peanut number one.
509 says, what's going on with Chris Sale?
A stomach issue, I think. And then also, his velocity is way down. I think just the fatigue of the season, pitching this late into the year, you're not going to be able to hit 100 miles an hour normally, but holy cow. The Red Sox, they could use some starting pitching real quick because you saw David Price last night get knocked around. Chris Sale, not the pitcher that he was early on in the season, where he was the Cy Young favorite in the American League. Now trying to come back and be the pitcher that he was before he went down with the injury midway through the year. It's uphill sledding for the Red Sox right now against a team that we're very familiar with here in Seattle. The Astros, who are deep just about everywhere you look, they've got starting pitching for days. Their bullpen biggest issue right now in Houston is Hector Rondon the answer. You got Roberto Osuna. You don't know what their bullpen's going to do, but right now I would pick the Astros the rest of the way in the American League. In fact, my World Series prediction right now is a rematch of last year, Dodgers-Astros.
All right. We'll see what happens. You
we
know,
will.
I'm,
I know.
I'm
biased. You being the Red Sox supporter that you are.
So I won't give my opinion.
Yeah.
206 says, was it a mistake for Peterson to not run one more play on third down at the end of the Huskies game? He seemed to have wasted time and could have run one more.
I believe so. I think they should have gotten at least a little closer, made it easier on Peyton Henry. 37 yards in college football is no chip shot at all. And kickers, you can't trust them anyway in college. And you leave it open to a possibility of an error like we saw going wide right. I think you get it closer and closer to that goal line. You give yourself a much better chance of making the kick. If you can get it to, you know, under 30 yards, your chances of making that field goal increase dramatically. And I think the Huskies, and we have a very different story to talk about today if that kick goes through. I think Chris Peterson may have botched the play calling at the very end. And then obviously in overtime, only rushing three on third and 11. You know, it's a game that the Huskies had, and they let it slip through their fingers, and, you know, now their college playoff hopes are dashed. Rose Bowl hopes not dashed, though. They can still have a shot at going to Pasadena and, you know, win the Pac-12 North, still win the Pac-12 Conference. It's not all – hope is not entirely lost on the Huskies after Saturday, just their national championship hopes.
I'm always amazed when I watch college football that we even have – good NFL kickers. Like, where do they come from?
Exactly. You bring that up because, like, Roberto Aguayo, the former Buccaneers kicker,
yeah.
He was statistically is the most accurate kicker in college football history, which that clearly didn't translate to the NFL because he was garbage from day one. So it's like, where do these kickers come from?
I know.
Like, you never heard about...
It's like a magic.
Yeah. You never heard about, like, Steven Hauschka in college. You never heard about Steven Goskowski. You only heard about Sebastian Janikowski in college because he was a first-round pick, unbelievably.
He got himself into a little bit of trouble, too.
Yeah,
he was
exactly.
A little notorious.
Yeah, he had himself quite a field day in Tallahassee, Florida.
253 says, C-Raj, what's the worst thing you have ever received trick-or-treating?
Like a ruler or an apple, one of the two. Those aren't fun. You get like little pamphlets put in on like, you know, just say no to drugs, which is always a good thing to say no to. But when you're a kid, when you're 8 years old and you've dressed up for Halloween, that's not what you want in your bag. You want candy. That's all you want.
I think there was someone in my neighborhood, I don't know if it was a dentist worried about all the candy, but
yeah.
They gave out toothbrushes.
Yeah, they put it like floss in there. Get out of here. Like, stop trying to...
Don't you remember being a kid?
Yeah, leave those kinds of messages out of the trick-or-treat bags. Unless you also, like, tie the floss to, like, a king-size candy bar. Then I think that's okay. But you can't just simply hand out floss. You can't simply hand out rulers with no candy reward in there. Like, get that through. If you're listening out there right now and you're thinking about, oh, I'm gonna be responsible and I'm gonna, you know, send a message to all these people. Don't. Your house will be avoided for the rest of however long you live there. Word will get out. Kids know which houses are the best houses when they head out for trick or treating.
I feel like I need the more you know tone, like
exactly.
PSA from Curtis Rogers.
Yeah, word gets out, and you don't want that reputation around your neighborhood.
Oh, my gosh. The 509 says, is Tyreek Hill the most underrated receiver in the league? He brings it every week. Hashtag go Red Sox.
Sure looks like it. I mean, Pat Mahomes and his emergence this season has been great to watch, but if he didn't have Tyreek Hill to throw to, you wonder where his numbers would be. I'm sure they would still be very impressive, but Mahomes to Hill is just a deadly duo. And then you've also got Kareem Hunt there. Andy Reid has really, in the last 2 years, has built that Kansas City offense into a juggernaut seemingly overnight. You know, you had Alex Smith there for so long, and he's not a guy that's going to stretch the field. You bring in maybe the exact opposite kind of quarterback where Pat Mahomes just built with a rocket of an arm, chucking it deep all the time. Their offense is so fun to watch right now. If they could get a little bit of defense, I think they would then become a favorite in the AFC. But right now, I don't think you can crown them as the best AFC team because they just got beat by the Patriots. And if the Chiefs are going to continue to be in these shootout games, that's a tough recipe to have success with in the postseason.
True. 206 says, my neighbor was a dental hygienist and gave out raisins and plastic spider rings every year. My mother forced us to go to this house.
Come on, Mom. Come on. Yeah, the plastic, like, jewelry that gets handed out, that's kind of dumb.
You can only wear those for a little while before they get all itchy. And,
yeah, and they like dig into your skin too. It's not a good feeling at all.
206 says, do you think Penny should be getting more touches?
I mean, his last two games, he's certainly been effective, averaging nearly 5 yards per carry. But at the same time, Mike Davis hasn't really done anything to warrant getting less touches. And... You know,
and I think that's what people don't realize. They just think that means that Penny's a bust, but it's a good problem to have. You have a few backs to choose from who are good.
You've got a nice problem to have. I don't think anything's getting taken away from Chris Carson. I think he is very much your number one running back. And Mike Davis has been incredibly effective as well over the last few weeks when the Seahawks have really started to win here. 3 of their last 4 could have very well been 4 of their last 4. Now you've got... an emerging Rashad Penny, hopefully. His last two games have been really good. I like where the Seahawks running game sits currently, and I don't know if you need to really tinker with it that much right now.
I would agree. That's it for text today.
All right. Thank you so much for your text on the Coors Light text line. When we return, the man, the Graz, he joins me next. Curtis Rogers filling in for John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
You can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Curtis Rogers here in for John Clayton with you for just a few more moments. I'm joined by the man. It's the Groz right here. Groz, how you doing today?
How are you, kid from Kent?
Doing good, doing good. Now, Groz, before we get into any Seattle sports talk here, because okay, it was a big weekend, Seahawks win, Huskies fall to the Ducks in Eugene, I want to thank you for providing an incredible service to the people of Seattle right now.
I think I know where you're going.
And it is your daily pictures of the Shake Shack line and how incredibly long it has been. You have steered me away from going multiple times already because just looking at the line.
It's astonishing. I mean, it opened on
last week, or yeah, like late last
Thursday
week.
Or Friday. There has been a constant line. It's open till 10, I think. There's been a constant line 12 hours a day, every single day. I didn't take a picture when I left this morning. So I left for work at about 10:45, and it opens at 11. And the line was just as long as all the pictures I've posted.
Unbelievable.
This is for just the burger place.
Burger and fries.
Yep. It's unbelievable. And it's Sunday during the Seahawk game was a big surprise. Last night at 9 o'clock, Sunday night at 9 o'clock was a big surprise. The weather is conducive for it. And people aren't working.
Yeah.
I guess. But I will continue to provide such services until the lines go away. Because I'm amazed at it.
There was a line during the Seahawks game?
Oh, it was just as long.
Unbelievable.
It's been unabated from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Every day it's been open.
That's
nonstop, never slacking, never low, always at least the length of the store to the parking lot that they share with the butcher's table, which is a really great high-end steakhouse, by the way.
Yeah, but they're getting no love right now.
No, I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, Seattle has a reputation as a foodie place, I suppose, that's crashing in the rocks.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just an East Coast burger stand.
And there's not much more to it than that. They serve burgers, fries, shakes, and like chicken sandwiches. That's it.
Yeah, I'm sure they're good.
They are. I've had
But they're it. Not an hour wait. I've had them too.
Yeah.
Not I've thought about here. I'm sure the ones here are good, but it's amazing. Yeah. So thank you for that, Curtis. I'll continue to provide the service as long as it's necessary.
Thank you. Yeah, it is an incredible, incredible thing going on right now. But Seahawks yesterday absolutely bludgeoning the Raiders. Seahawks pass rush, it's there. Unbelievably, you know, no Cliff Avril, no Michael Bennett. A lot of people wondered where it was going to come from. What did you think about Frank Clark just absolutely putting the fear of God into Derek Carr yesterday?
Well, he had a great day. I find myself, and I read some of the comments afterwards, or some of the stories that we wrote, and Jim Moores is the one I agree with. I'm not so sure that was the Seahawks or the Raiders. The Raiders are terrible. Their offensive line was chewed to pieces in this game. Now, a good team takes advantage of that, which the Seahawks did, at five or six sacks, but I got to see them against a better offensive line because my takeaway from the game was the Seahawks did what a good team is supposed to do, which is beat a bad team handily, never in doubt. But the Raiders should be winless. I mean, when you think about the game they won against the Browns, it was a miracle.
Yeah.
They're awful. And they were beat up in that game, but it doesn't take away from Frank Clark, with I think 2.5 sacks was all over him. If you get an advantage, you take it, and he took it. So you couldn't help but walk away impressed. They get a week's bye. The Lions game will be an interesting game. Lions are about the same as they are. You know, the Jets are 3-3-2. The Seahawks are in that great middle territory now at 3-3, but they're 3 of the last 4. They're trending the right way, but the Lions game on the road will be interesting. And then that's the point, is that they got a ton of home games left after that, 6 out of 9 remaining at home. But it was impressive. At the same time, the Raiders were awful.
Absolutely.
And if it wasn't the Seahawks, it was a game not to watch.
No, there was not a whole lot of good football coming from Wembley Stadium yesterday.
No, there wasn't.
If you weren't a Seahawks fan.
If you weren't a Seahawks fan, it was a direct game. But if you are a Seahawks fan, you saw all the things you need to see for them to be successful.
Now, there was one good football game, at least aesthetically pleasing, in the Northwest, and that was Washington-Oregon. As someone who has been around this rivalry for as long as you have, can you remember a more competitive game between the two schools?
Not when it was in this circumstance. I mean, I'm sure they've had competitive games, but not in the last 15 years, and not when both are ranked, where there's so much on the line, and it to be that kind of game, which was nip and tuck the entire way. I, like a lot of people, think Chris Peterson blew the game. I mean, pure and simple. You know, he had 35 seconds left. You don't set things up for a freshman kicker whose longest kick is 41 yards. You're going to have him go 37 yards in a pressure cooker like that. You take a shot or two. Now, there's no guarantee that it would have worked, but, I mean, you bet on your senior quarterback. So I thought that was my big takeaway from the game. But I agree with what you said. Incredibly compelling football game.
A senior quarterback who in that second half
was unstoppable.
Was 9 of 10 at one point.
Yeah, I mean, how do you justify not running a play there and running the clock down? I just don't think you can. So I think I'll be curious if Chris Peterson wears that or not. I don't know that he will, because he didn't tend to second-guess himself. He's a great coach. Don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
I mean, he is a fantastic coach who's done an amazing job turning that program around. But I think he made a mistake. I think he made a big mistake by not taking a shot or two down the field, at least one more shot, to get it even closer for the field goal kick. And then, you know, I mean, bad luck. I mean, they weren't able to stop him on defense when they've been able to. They'd had a decent day on defense, not a great day on defense, because Oregon was averaging 505 yards a game, and they held them under that. But, you know, when they got that field goal in overtime, it was hard to feel confident that they were going to stop Oregon. So, I mean, it was, you know, what rule I'd like to see changed in college football is calling multiple timeouts for field goal kickers.
Yeah, the ice kickers at the ends of games.
You get one. I think in the pros, you get one timeout.
That's it.
That's what you should get in college.
Yeah, they called back-to-back timeouts at the very end. He missed
the first one. He made the second one. Just as a strategy thing, I think it should be limited to one, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, Oregon won the game, and it was a great game.
You look at the history of the rivalry, and neither team it's been one team that's been really good for years, and then you saw it shift to Oregon, who was really good for years.
Well, it's been Washington has been really good for years. Then it shifted for the first time to Oregon, and now it seemingly is about even, because Washington owns the rivalry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's 60-46 now all time, and you know,
and Oregon won 12 in a row.
Yeah, so really Washington was far and away the better school for nearly a century going up against the Ducks. Do you think we could be entering into the most competitive years of the Oregon-Washington rivalry?
Sure feels that way. If we're off to a very good start. It depends on whether or not that coach stays. Cristobal stays. He seems to have got a good handle on things. You know, it's the third coach in 3 years for Oregon.
Yeah.
Peterson is solid at UW. You know, he's got the, you know, was an assistant coach there under Mike Bellotti for 6 years, so there's a connection there. It's all the rivalry needs is to be competitive, and this is a great start. They'll have to prove it on the field, but I would say that if it becomes competitive, it's the first time it's been competitive.
And the players in Oregon, they seem to have really attached themselves to Mario Cristobal. They were campaigning.
Immediately, yeah.
Yeah, they were campaigning for him after Willie Taggart left. And so it seems like Oregon's got something good going in Eugene, which that's much to the chagrin of Husky fans.
No doubt.
In Seattle. Across the state.
Yeah, game day coming to Pullman.
Cougs finally get game day coming to Pullman. It's been 15 years since the first Crimson flag was flown above the
set. Wouldn't it be
set.
Ironic if they didn't have it for this one?
They just, like, forgot it? It couldn't make the trip to Pullman?
Couldn't make the trip to Pullman. Made it everywhere else. But, no, that's always been a tradition that they've kept track of. You know, the game day guys have. I'm excited for the guys at Washington State. You know, I'm a former Washington State color broadcaster.
That's right. You were there with Bob Robb.
Yeah, in the early 90s when they had a Alamo Bowl winning team. So I think it's going to be fun for them. And look, they got a great opportunity.
Absolutely. Although Ducks coming to town.
Although I think the Pac-12's chances of playing in the Bowl Championship Series have really taken a hit.
Yeah, after Washington lost. Well, then you look at if Washington had remained unbeaten the rest of the way, their one loss was to an Auburn team that has faltered.
They got beat by Tennessee, who had lost 11 straight in the SEC.
Yeah, that's their third loss now on the season. So even the one loss the Huskies had did not look so good.
No, they would have been alive, though, because the SEC tends to eat itself up. And, you know, you had Georgia lose, too. But Colorado losing, by the way, although I don't think anyone out here thought they were that elite. But they're the ones who probably had the best chance of running, if they could run the table, and obviously SC put an end to that.
What do you got coming up today on Bob Grouse and Tom?
We're going to talk about the Seahawks win and the Husky game as well, and it's just me and Tom today.
All right. Looking forward to it. John Clayton, he'll be back tomorrow. Thank you so much. Curtis Rogers filling in for the professor right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.